Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 153 of D&D Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Buffenhofer. How you doing, Ben?
I am here and doing okay. I was outside for a bit yesterday, and there's a lot of pollen in the air, so I've been sneezing all day, so... We're going to hope I get through it without having to mute and sneeze in the middle of talking.
Yep. I know the pain.
Yeah. Growing up with allergies this has just been my life every single spring.
Yep. It is the worst. But that is why we are indoors right now.
Yep.
And
I mean, that's not the only reason why.
Try and stay indoors as much as possible. That too.
And it's easier to record this way. There's a lot of reasons, but pollen's a big one.
We got a few things, a few fun things to talk about tonight. For once, it was a fairly light news week. Just a few little tidbits from GaryCon, which just happened, which is one of like the seminal D&D conventions that is very like D&D specific. At it, Wizards announced just a few things, the biggest of which being that Dungeons and Dragons modules would be coming back. For those who don't know what the modules were, this is originally a term from like the 70s the 90s, kind of refers to basically a short adventure that you could play in a few sessions, and were apparently very popular through some of the earlier editions of D&D. They haven't done a whole lot of that type of thing in 5th edition, but with these new seasons that they're going to be doing, it sounds like they're going to start bringing this format back as well. And I actually think this is a really good thing, because a lot of the adventures, while great, can take quite a bit of time to play through, and it is quite the time commitment. So having new content that is fun, and interesting and can be played through in just a few sessions will likely be very popular.
Yeah, it's something that's really cool. And they did release like some examples of these, within the last year or two, like the Uni and the Hunt for the Lost Eunuch or the Lost Horn, Hold Back the Dead, which was like the Vecna prequel adventure, and then the Scions of Elemental Evil. And if I remember correctly, they gave all those out for free on D&D Beyond, so they're there even now. But they are just, kind of shorter adventures and stuff, and, it gives you something to kind of play around with and everything. So having more of these coming out as opposed to, like, a big adventure, like, setting and stuff, I think is pretty great. It gives you a lot more versatility to your storytelling, to what you need to do. And I like the idea of, multiples of these coming out throughout the year to, throw in more, magic items or monsters, or, just, in the very least, inspiration for story stuff for your own homebrew, if you're not going to use it as the entire module, like adventure itself. So yeah, this is pretty great. I'm happy that this stuff is kind of coming back, because anytime I go to like a used Bookman's or bookstore or something like that, and you go to the TTRPG section, before D&D blew up, they would have tons of different like module books and everything for different editions. And I always thought that that's kind of what it was, until I saw that there was adventure books that came out, So yeah, it's kind of nice.
I also think it makes a lot of sense with the whole season format they're going to be trying to do. That type of content seems like it would fit really well into like a seasonal type thing, where if you have a one or two or three modules come out per season, whether they're just free on D&D Beyond like some of the other ones have been, or just like, really cheap products, pick this up for $5 or $10. Yeah, I bet they'll be fairly popular.
Yeah, and especially if you have a couple different, adventures tied to a season, I think that's actually really cool too. Like, I'll be really happy with, the season of magic. Okay, here's like this adventure where you have to, investigate this magical effect that's happening in the land. Whereas this one over here is trying to collect a magical artifact, or this one over here is, you know, researching a new spell or something, you know, throughout a couple different, small adventures and modules for each season. And it just, you know, fills it up with that much more good stuff.
Yeah. And it'll be interesting to see whether if they're like standalone things completely, or like standalone things that can maybe tie into the bigger adventure that mm-hmm. is released for the season as well. I think that could be really cool. And I think I would honestly prefer that in a lot of ways. Because then it's like, oh, I can run this separately, or oh, I can run this as a supplement to this bigger adventure book.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So yeah, lots of fun, good stuff that used to be considered only one shots now coming in officially as modules.
Yeah. They also had an announcement for an announcement, because those are very popular these days. They announced that the products tied to the Season of Champions will be announced at Gen Con this year, as well as the upcoming roadmap for the rest of the year. Now, Gen Con, for those who don't know, is the end of July. So that is quite a while. They did announce several things, obviously. We have our Season of Horror and Season of Magic coming up, but it doesn't sound like we're going to get a whole lot more until that Gen Con time period.
Yeah. But, you know, it's great. In fact, Ryan, I have a surprise to tell you. It's going to be amazing. You have to wait 6 months, though, but I'm going to tell it to you in 6 months.
Excellent. I'm so excited for the thing that you're going to tell me in 6 months.
And just so I don't hold myself to something, I actually do not have something to tell you in 6 months. I ruined the surprise.
I already wrote it down.
Dang it.
The only other big thing that really came out of Gary Kahn is they mentioned that Wes Schneider, who is going to be the product lead for Ravenloft, The Horrors Within, he was also the product lead for the last Ravenloft book, Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft. So if you liked that, it will be more of that, a continuation of that. They released a few more details about The Horrors Within, specifically being the new Ravenloft book will have actual stat blocks for the various Dark Lords, which is something that the original Van Richten's Guide lacked.
Oh.
So if you're looking for the big bads, essentially, that will be in the new book as actual stat blocks.
Well, that's pretty good. I've done nothing with Ravenloft, but that's great. I'm happy that scary things are now written out and official.
I mean, it's been noted that Curse of Strahd is one of the, if not the most popular 5th edition mm-hmm. adventure. So more official supplements for that. And obviously people have made massive amounts of third party content for Curse of Strahd. But this will fill out those Domains of Dread. And if you are playing in a Ravenloft or Curse of Strahd campaign and want to integrate more stuff, it's always nice to have more official stuff as well. The other big thing is D&D Beyond actually just released their character quick builder. Their updated one. This is something they hinted at in their AMA that they said was coming soon. It actually launched just a few days ago. And Ben, I know you played around with it a little bit.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
You know what? First of all, as someone who has made tons of characters, this is probably something I won't use unless someone's like, hey, I need a character for you, or you need a character in 2 minutes. then yeah, easily something to do. But it was actually really kind of cool and surprisingly good. I went ahead, I jumped in. I'm like, okay, I like playing a bard. I'm going to go ahead and just make a bard on the quick, you know, the quick builder. So basically you go in, it's super simple. And it starts off with like, okay, well, what do you want to do? You know, you choose your class, you choose your species, and then you choose a background. And like, that's all you do. It does everything else for you. So it does all of your abilities. It uses the standard array, as far as I can tell. It'll choose all your proficiencies on different things for you. Based on your whatever background you choose, it'll choose, you know, kind of going with that. And it seemed to do a pretty decent job at picking things, distributing things. And I got to say, the Tiefling Bard that I randomly made, it worked pretty well. You know what? I was kind of happy with it as something that I needed to do super fast. It's, you know, essentially making a pre-generated character. It worked great, and I was happy with it. Now, the big thing that I cared more about was, after it's made, how hard is it to go in and actually start playing around and messing with it and, you know, maybe choosing different spells or doing something like that? And it's just like any other character on D&D Beyond at that point. It's just, you just go back into, you know, you click on the anvil and you can go in, redistribute, change everything that you want. But I mean, it was really super easy, great to use. And like, overall, I think it's actually pretty good.
Yeah, the UI for it is very easy. Lots of really pretty art, big buttons. A new person could easily jump in here and pick just like the 4 or 5 things that you need to pick and get a character out of it without having to know much of anything. And yeah, it's got little descriptions of everything, like the class, the background, that type of thing. So you can quickly jump between and read about them. And so like new players, making new characters, this would be a very, very easy thing to do. So big kudos for them, because accessibility is a really big deal. I know there's still a lot of work they want to do on the character sheet part of this, but as far as like streamlining an easy, quick build character creation, especially for someone who doesn't know a whole lot of what they're doing and just wants to get in and play, very well done for it.
Yeah. And one of the things that I thought was really neat too is that, so I'm someone who has a lot of different stuff on D&D Beyond, you know, from different supplements, different, you know, things that I've bought. I have 2014 versions. I have 2024 versions. I've got all that stuff. So like when I choose class, it has the 2024 classes. Like that's it, which I'm like, okay, cool. That's great. It's putting everybody into what you want. But at the very top, if I wanted to use just the 5e, not the 5.5e, I can just click that. And then those versions are available to choose from. So it helps when you're, you know, kind of worried about, you know, new players who might not know, oh, well, what do I do? What do I, you know, which one should I choose and stuff? You just set it up for them right away. You can have any sort of complexity that you want in the build. So like if you want a low complexity, you know, character, it'll choose things that are kind of based off of that versus like high, you know, for someone who's been playing more or often, you know, you have that as well. But the neat thing on top of that is that, like, if I were to click on species, it's got all of the different species that I have from all these different other books that have come out. So, like, you know, if you're just brand new to this, you're going to have the normal 5.5, species and stuff. But since I have the Faerun books and everything like that, I also have fairies in here. I also have Rhymekins and Warforged, you know, from Eberron and everything, because I have those as well, which I think is actually pretty great because it gives you all those options that you have available. And it has the artwork for every single one too, which I think is really important because, you know, how often have we talked to people who have said, you know, just the artwork is amazing. I like it. One of their big designs in the Player's Handbook was to have each subclass have its own, you know, a vision and art to kind of give an idea of you know, what that fantasy is and stuff. So it's a lot of that mixed in with everything. I mean, even when I go to my fifth edition and I'm looking at species, I've got all that I've had from forever ago. You know, like the Grung is on here. I've got my Tabaxi, Tortle, the Plasmoid, like just all that stuff is still there. So it's really neat. It's very visually appealing. And just overall, like I think that it's a good start, really.
Yeah, I completely agree. Definitely go check it out. It's free to use. Even if you just have the free account and don't own any content, you'll still get all the SRD stuff that you'll be able to use it for. So definitely check it out. Okay, moving on. We had a really good topic land in our Discord. And so we wanted to take just a little bit of time to kind of talk through it. And it involves metagaming. So just before I read the question, metagaming, just as kind of a definition for those who might not be familiar with it, is basically taking out-of-game knowledge and applying it in game. Like, for example, above the table, out of game, I, Ryan, the player, know certain things about the world or about other characters or something, even if it wasn't told to me in an in-character way, or there's no way my in-character, given their background, etc., would be able to know that. But metagaming is me taking that information and then using it in game to my advantage. Like, oh, I know this monster has X amount of hit points or does these sorts of attacks or is vulnerable to X, Y, or Z because I'm a DM and I've played with it before or something like that. Or I know that this character's background is a certain thing, so I want to avoid talking about XYZ, or, you know, just there's combat things. Combat gets brought up a whole lot, where a lot of people wonder where the line is between planning, helping out, or just straight up saying, oh, that guy's behind the rock over there. My character couldn't see him, but I'm looking at a battle map. Mm-hmm. And I, the player, see him. Yeah. So I'm going to position accordingly.
Right. Yeah. And on top of that, too, it's like, you know, oh, I played through the Rime of the Frostmane before. I know that this elk is actually awakened, so I'm just going to start talking to it as opposed to attacking or something. Specifically in a one shot that we played at our game store probably about a year ago at this point, there was a we were, you know, doing a dungeon crawl, and there was a trap room. And as soon as the DM described it, I knew exactly what it was, what would happen. I just busted up laughing, and she kind of looked at me. I'm like, don't worry, I'm not going to say anything. I know this trap. So she's like, dang it. But I'm, you know, I did what I could to hold back, not, you know, talk about what was actually going to be happening. I didn't interfere. I played my character as I don't know, and let everybody else kind of, you know, do their own thing and try different things out and stuff, to the point where finally I just kind of started doing things that might do something. But I mean, I knew it wouldn't, but it was still me kind of getting in, helping them kind of, you know, cross things off the list of like what could happen or what we need to do and stuff. But yeah, anything of it's essentially comes down to anything out of game knowledge that you know that your character might not.
So the question that we got was basically a question about the line between optimization and metagaming. In their video about Combat Tactics 101 by the Dungeon Dudes, which we will That's a great community content shout out. We'll put a link to that in our show notes on DeedDiscussions.com. But the Dungeons Dudes advice to share your spells, abilities, and tactics between sessions, especially after level up, to find synergy and develop the overall battle strategy of the group. This isn't realistic. No way characters are keeping teammates up to date on everything they can possibly do. And some DMs might call this metagaming. On the other hand, this saves some actual gaming time. Should players roleplay strategy meetings about a specific situation and keep everything else above the table? This is a great question, honestly. And I think the answer to this really is going to come down to the table you're at.
Yeah.
In a lot of ways, because some DMs have more lenience or more lenient on for this type of thing than others. Like in my mind, basic strategy and tactics, obviously you can't just blanket statement, but 99% of the time you do not role play your characters every hour of every day of the campaign.
Yeah.
It's just not practical. Your characters are doing stuff in those other intervening hours where you're not doing the important things, right? They may be chatting together. They may be sleeping. They may be talking about more mundane things. It's very possible that, or very probable that, your characters talk about battle strategy, tactics, and some of the things that they are able to do, their abilities they have, the spells they have, tactics that might be good the next time they have to fight something. I think that is completely reasonable to assume something that happens without having to role play it out. There's also the subject of tactics during combat. For me personally, I kind of tread the middle line of, I don't like fully shut down. No, these are 6-second turns. You've just got to act. You can't really think through a whole lot of this and whatnot. I usually let people above table talk back and forth a little bit, because one, I think that it's more fun for the players to do that, because at the end of the day, this is a game and we want to have fun.
Yeah.
If you limit things too much, you can really squelch the fun aspect of it and turn it into something that's just very high anxiety, very anxious, very do or die, or overthinking, I made the wrong decision, or, oh no, I wasn't able to think about that enough, or something happened right before my turn that changes the whole thing that I was going to do, right? So at the end of the day, I want the game to be fun.
Yeah.
On the other side of that, though, I don't want every turn taking 10 to 15 minutes. Like, you have to find your happy medium somewhere where it's just like, okay, guys, you can't talk about strategy in the middle of a fight above the table for 10 or 15 minutes. Mm-hmm. Like this is, we're still in a combat round. If you take a minute or two here or there to throw stuff back and forth, that's fine. Once it starts turning into something where it's massively elongating combat, especially if it happens every turn and not just occasionally, that's when I will kind of draw the line and say, okay, you got to do something right now, or potentially there's consequences, right? Maybe something else happens, or, you know, it's, again, it's just something you have to respect people's time too. So you as a DM, it's very table dependent, but you have to ride a fine line between fun and realism.
Yeah. You know, and the way I look at it too is like, Colossus didn't just pick up Wolverine and throw him to make the fastball special. There was communication there for them to kind of work together for that, you know? Same with this. It's for the most part, I don't really have a big deal of like someone yelling something on their turn and then someone else like responding, not on their turn. You know, it's just kind of one of those things where it's like, whatever, you know, we're having a good time. We're enjoying stuff. If the other person playing wants to wait till their turn to respond, because that's how they want to go with it. And, you know, like, have the battle kind of play out that way. Yeah, that's fine. You know, however they want to do it, I'm okay with it, but I'm not going to ding someone to be all like, no, you can't say okay in this, you know, split second during this round of combat or something. Like overall, yeah, I think that, you know, discussing kind of what's going on, or, you know, if you're trying to set something up or whatever, I think is definitely allowable because, again, we're having a fun time. Everybody's playing the game together. The things that you really want to watch out for, though, is, you know, if people are trying to do some sort of, you know, synergy or do something like that, you can't have one person say, hey, you're going to do this on your turn. You're going to do this on your turn. You're going to do this on your turn. And this is what we're going to do, where, you know, I get to do the crescendo and make all the big explosions because you did put everybody in the same spot. You know, asking of like, hey, do we want to try to group them up? I've got this spell or something like that works much nicer, but also you're not taking agency away from anybody else for something that they are either planning on doing alone or they want to do on their turn, or they might have a better idea. You know, that's one of those things. But one of those things too is like, you know, if you can give advantage to someone on certain things, maybe don't just give it to them to force them to attack a certain monster or something along those lines. Like at a one shot that we had, someone's like, yeah, I'm going to give you an advantage on this monster right here. But it's like, I wasn't planning on attacking them at all. I guess I have to now. Otherwise it's a waste of your mechanic. So, you know, for different things like that, again, talking about it, making sure everyone's okay with it or offering it, or, you know, doing things like, you know, how's your health looking? You know, does anybody look really bad? Are they really beaten up? So that a healer can know, because they're obviously not in that spot to know. So above table, as opposed to like, you know, writing down hit points that people have lost throughout the whole thing and like, you know, essentially counting cards for the combat to know if you're, as a healer, should be doing something, you know, like different things like that totally works, makes sense, because you're actually looking at it through the character's eyes as best you can. You know, and there are times, and I have had my players ask things like, would I be able to see this at, you know, from here, as you alluded to, dude hiding behind the rock, you know, it's kind of one of those things where as a DM, you look to see where your players are comfortable and what they want to do. And then if it's out of your comfort zone, kind of, you know, nudge them back into it, you know, get everybody kind of more on the same page. And kind of what Ryan was saying is just, you know, it's a game. Everybody's trying to have fun. As the DM, you should also have fun. But overall, everybody just, you know, go at it with what feels comfortable and right. And that is kind of the big thing. Like you were saying, Ryan, it's going to be table by table for the most part.
Yeah. And I really want to zero in on the whole player agency thing. It's fine to make suggestions, but never try and take over and play another player's character.
Yes.
That's a big no-no for me. And that's something that I will likely try and shut down if I see it happening, at my table. Thankfully that has happened very, very seldom. I think it's very fun if you in character want to yell out, hey, we should do this, or something like that. I'm not a fan of above the table, hey, you're going to do this, I'm going to do this, then this will happen type thing. I'm okay if that's a suggestion, but I'm not okay if it's a command.
Yeah, like asking, type thing. Like saying something like, hey, I can lock him down with a thorn whip wait, that's like a Pokemon move. But anyways, with, you know, what
my Bulbasaur will get him.
Yeah. Or, in Wild Moves, oh, I could freeze him in place with Frost Nova. No, you know, just, you know, kind of talking about different things. Or, you know, if you have a bard and they're going to charm someone, just yell out, hey, don't attack this guy. You know, that could be something that happens at the table, exactly. Like in combat, as opposed to someone immediately just running up and attacking them. Again, wasting the other person's turn.
This is a collaborative game.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
There are things that you want to try to avoid if someone has put work in. Mm-hmm. for certain things to happen. But this is, it's something you, especially experienced players, and sometimes they do it without even thinking about it, but it's something you always have to be watching for, especially when you're playing with new players, mm-hmm. because they're not going to know as much. They might take a little longer. You can make suggestions, especially if they ask for it. Or you can ask them, hey, do you want some help? Because some people don't appreciate unsolicited suggestions as well. But there's nothing ever wrong with saying, hey, do you want some help?
Yeah,
I'd be happy to help you if you want it type thing.
And another thing to kind of add on to that, too, especially with newer players, who, you know, maybe they only play video games or, you know, something along those lines. Like if they don't understand the rules behind like friendly fire for like AOE spells or something like that, that's something that I would just point out. And usually if I'm in that situation as a player and I will fall into that, I egg them on and say, do it, because, you know, it's something that they wanted to do, whatever, you know what, my player or my character, I can get hit. You know, I might lose some or take some damage or whatever. If I fall down and you know, go unconscious, then that's part of the story, whatever. I don't want to take that agency away from someone, but I do want them aware of what will happen if they do it, if that makes sense. Because, you know, if someone's really excited, they just got Fireball and they want to cast it, like there's no tomorrow, like this is what I want to do, and there's no safe way to do it. Again, I'll encourage them as the player who's in the middle of that fireball to say, yes, do it. This will be awesome. And, you know, that goes along with a lot of us, too, is like, yeah, it's not metagaming to be all like, yeah, you know what? Have fun. Have at it. Do whatever. It's going to hurt me, but I don't care. Or, you know, something along the lines of, if you happen to know that this monster is weak against acid and is immune to fire, and you're like, I'm going to cast Fireball. It's like, well, yeah, let them do it. Find out as they're going through and playing the game. You don't have to say, man, that hide looks like it's real weak to acid. You know, it's like, that's no fun. No one likes that. That being said, does the person who's casting a Firebolt and waste that turn finding out get upset? Yeah, probably, but it's a lesson learned for everybody else at the table, what's going on, and then everybody's on the same page. That being said,
also, as a DM, you can help out with that too, mm-hmm. by telegraphing what you need to.
Yeah. Or if a player says, hey, have I ever seen anything or read anything about these monsters before? Then you have them do a history check or a nature check or a religion check or whatever, you know, works with that. And then depending on, you know, what you think a good DC is, you can give them the information of, oh yeah, you know, that, you know, this is actually weak to acid, but it is fireproof. You don't want to use fire on that. And then at that point, that character can yell out, don't use fire, or, you know, something along those lines. Or if they roll a one, you say, oh yeah, they are hurt by fire so bad. You need to throw everything you have firewise at this. And then, yeah, you know,
as far as you know,
yeah. And then again, that's kind of a meta joke. Everybody's in on it and thinks it's funny. And, you know, that person will cast a Firebolt and then be like, oh, I was told something wrong, or, you know, something along those lines. You know, have fun. Yeah. If you're going to meta game, do it in a fun way that everybody's in on it. And it's not just one person with the knowledge who is reaping all the rewards.
Yeah, exactly. Turn it into RP.
Yeah, exactly.
Like that's a really fun way to do it. Also, from a DM perspective, if you need to, don't be afraid to shut things down.
Yeah.
Especially from a combat perspective. If someone is trying to do something that might be very metagamey or that might be something that their player character would have no idea about or no idea what to do or would not know like positioning or something like that, it is okay as a DM to go, your character wouldn't know that.
Yeah, like
your character would not know they're there. Your character would have no background in XYZ and wouldn't know about this thing at all. Because remember, we talked about this before, don't have them roll unless you're okay with them succeeding.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right? It's one of those things where it's, no, you don't always have to give them the history check. It just might be a situation where that character would have no conceivable way of knowing about this. So they don't get to roll at all because that's just not something that's possible. Yeah. And that is fine.
Exactly. You as a player might know that you're up against a vampire, but your character might not know what a vampire is. So if I'm a DM and they don't know what vampires are, and obviously they don't know that they're weak, you know, weakness is sunlight and can kill them and all that stuff. And one of my players says, I'm going to shoot out the skylight above them. I'd be like, why? You have no idea what this creature is. Why would you think that that would be something to do? And then, you know what? At a good table to say, you know what? That's fair. Can I do a history check or anything like that? That's when you either offer it to me and say, no, this is something brand new that you've never seen before. Because that's the thing, is you don't know as the player if this is a normal vampire. You don't know if it's a special type. You don't know if something's different or if this is the first one that has ever been seen in the world before. So again, going along with that dialogue with your DM and not, like Ryan said, if you don't want them to, or if there's no possible way that they'll ever win, don't have them do the role. And in this instance, vampires are brand new. So no reason that you would know that the sun's going to hurt them. No reason why you would break out the skylight above it.
Yeah. And that is, it's playing to, you want the balance and the fairness on both sides of the screen, right? Mm-hmm. The DM wants to have fun too. The DM has crafted this combat encounter. The DM has put in a lot of work for certain things. So if you're trying to do something that's counter to your character's knowledge or the world knowledge or something like that, again, as the DM, it is okay to say no or shut that down, right? Like there are certain things where you go, no, you're doing something that is fully beyond what your character would know or do. And again, I haven't had to do that a ton.
Yeah, same here.
It's one of those things where you want to establish a trust at the table where you trust your players and they trust you as the DM. And a lot of times if I have that happen and I say, oh no, you wouldn't know that, or your character can't see that, or the only reason that you're doing that is because I can't do something on the battle map, right? Then that's fine. That's just one of those things that happens. Have a quick conversation, figure out a better way to do it.
Yeah.
And again, it's a table to table thing and there are different players in different ways of doing it. But overall, it comes back to making sure you maintain that trust between player and DM.
Yeah. And if you do deny that, you know, sort of like information gathering or, you know, player knowledge going into the characters and stuff, reward that, I guess, trust, like with the sunlight example of the vampires, reward that trust of them, you know, realizing, okay, yeah, that's something I shouldn't do. Maybe have, a missed arrow, poke through a window or something and a little bit of sunlight gets on the vampire and they recoil. Or, you know, maybe an acid splash weakens the ceiling a little bit and a little bit of light comes in or something, you know, it kind of give them that information organically through the combat and the actions and everything so that the character can learn this so that, you know, they can use that environment to their advantage or something, because that's one of the things that I always really want to try to do is reward creativity, thinking out of the box. And when it's something that's just straight up, let's just attack it the entire time, as opposed to let's figure out a faster or better way of tackling this, you know, give that to them at some point, reward that knowledge, and, you know, bring it into the game.
Yeah. And that's just a good DM tip in general, honestly, is telegraph things, organically reveal things. Maybe if someone asks a certain thing and they don't know about it, maybe offer an alternative. Be like, well, Megan's character might know about this. Yours probably wouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because then you can still give your players that those cool moments and still get that information, but do it in game. And not just from an out of game thing where someone might be using meta knowledge to try and find something out.
If you want to reward a player who's playing a bard, give them all the mythical like information and stuff like that. Cause you know, bards tell stories and that's how they do their magic and stuff. So, you know, oh yeah, I've heard of the five-headed Hydra. That's kind of weird. It used to be the three-headed Hydra, but then someone cut off one of the heads. You know, like it's something fun like that. It could be kind of neat.
Yeah. Yeah. But again, meta knowledge has its place.
Mm-hmm.
And it will differ from table to table how much or how far the players or DM or both are willing to stretch those things. But hopefully some of the stuff we've talked about and some of the tips will help you as you're playing through. And if you have any tips of your own that we didn't talk about or didn't mention, feel free to throw it in our Discord. We've got a nice little show discussion channel where we usually can discuss episodes going back and forth and the tops we talked about. We'd love to hear other feedback and other opinions as well. It's excellent to have dialogue.
Definitely.
All right. So like I said, Dungeon Dudes are awesome. We will have a link to their YouTube in our show notes at dndiscussions.com. If you've not checked them out, fantastic D&D content creators. And they were the ones who did the Tales from Wood Creek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which is phenomenal. So if you haven't, also, if you haven't watched that, it's only like six sessions long, six or eight, something like that. It's been out for 4 or 5 months now. So definitely go check that out because Deborah Ann Wall is phenomenal.
Yes. And also but on
it's season, a great show.
Season two of Daredevil Reborn. She's back in it a little bit more this season. So, yeah.
Yeah. Very excited about that.
But yeah,
I enjoyed the first season of that show for sure. Very fun. That's a great fighting style. you want a flavor, a rogue or a monk?
Yeah.
Daredevil. Very, very, very cool. Very, very fun way to flavor things for sure.
We need a Daredevil subclass now.
I feel like someone has to have made.
Oh, I'm sure.
A good one somewhere. Be fun. We'll look it up. We'll look it up and see if we can find. Find something.
Yeah, we will totally forget about it before next show.
Making a note.
Oh,
find Daredevil
subclass. Like,
subclass. It's official. Official. We're gonna look.
You know what? Might
be fun.
I'm just gonna look right now on D&D Beyond, see what I can find.
But yeah, so definitely go check them out. that is going to do it for most of the main content we have. Fairly light news week, but hopefully we'll get some more of those D&D Beyond improvements and more information on the Season of Horror that is coming up soon that we can talk about here in a little bit. But before we go, as always, we like to talk a little bit about what we've been doing in our games. Ben, are you back? Have you done any one-shots, or are you still just kind of simmering?
Still skirting. Skirting on the outset of getting something done.
You know, I hope you are pushed over the edge at some point.
Yeah, me too. Soon.
We're all rooting for you.
Well, thank you.
Because, dang it, I want to hear what happens.
Yeah, me too.
Ben, what, 5 or 6 years? Of this same campaign, which is wild, really, yeah, to talk about.
It's been going on for a little while, just a little while.
Yeah, just absolutely wild. I, however, did get to play.
Ooh.
We had our a really big downtime session, and so there was a lot of, just a lot of character moments, essentially, that happened. We're not in we're in the city political intrigue campaign. So a lot of rewards for things are not necessarily like loot, right? It's been a very different structure for things. So a lot of the rewards have been one like money, giving them money, but then allowing them to just buy what they want. They are in a very big city and there's access to lots of different things. So like having a character buy fire resistant plate armor. It is resistant to itself. And you know, things like that, magical tattoos, are something in my world. So, I love, if you've been listening for a long time, you'll know one of the things I love doing is designing my own magic items. It's just something I like to do. So, designed a magical tattoo for our monk player that was kind of geared specifically, to his character, which is super cool. Having some, an item that is directly related to a warlock's patron and the character's backstory, that they don't even know quite what it does yet, but it's something that they got, which is super cool. So there's a lot of, one of the players is working on a bastion, so gonna here slowly get some experience with the bastion system.
Good.
Inside the game, which is really cool. So I'm excited to figure that out and be able to talk about that a little bit more in detail, since it will actually be a thing in our campaign. So yeah, it was really good. Didn't end on anything like shocking or crazy, just a lot of really good role play. A lot of the characters kind of taking a little time to get stuff done after just this frantic day by day arc. And I'm excited to pick back up from there here in a few weeks.
Well, very cool. I mean, you know, those downtime sessions are really important. You know, just like you don't want to have the Enterprise running at warp 9 all the time. You need to have it, you know, kind of, you know, give it a chance to breathe. Let them, you know, enjoy RP. Let them enjoy their home, which is such a unique and different thing for a campaign of just, you know, everybody having a home base and having the majority of it take place in that same area. I think that's actually pretty cool. So I'm glad that they were able to do that, and that you're definitely able to have some fun throwing together some fantastic magical items and especially a tattoo. I think magical tattoos are an amazing thing to add to a game because, well, one, it's a magic item that you're pretty much attuned with forever. There's ways to remove it. Don't recommend them, but there's ways. But even more so, like, especially a specific, like, warlock patron themed, weapon and stuff. That's pretty cool. So, it sounds like everybody had a really good time and, you know, give that bastion some time to grow. I'm really curious as to how that works out, because not necessarily what we're going to be talking about next episode or not, but there was a question about bastions brought up in our Discord as well, talking about, you know, timing on it, since a lot of the things take, you know, 20 in-game weeks to do things or something like that.
Yeah.
Where some campaigns take a total of like 4 weeks. So, you know, it's one of those things where, yeah, maybe we'll talk about it. Maybe we won't. We'll see. But I'm glad that you're getting some experience with it so that you can, one, really dig in more and get a good feel for the system, and two, you know, have that discussion sometime soon.
Yeah. Yeah. The players are level 9. So we're almost, you know, halfway point level wise in the campaign. Lots of stuff is happening. Magical tattoos are super fun, and maybe we'll have another conversation about like designing magic items and stuff again, because I know it's been quite a while since we've talked about magic items specifically. But I've had this character for quite some time, and in my world, magical tattoos are something that's fairly new. And legitimately, they are only done by one person. There are probably others that have kind of worked out how to do it or how it works, or maybe can like half do them or do them partially right, but with side effects or whatever. But there's this specific NPC in my big city, in the gnome and halfling district, that just makes these tattoos. And it's really cool because the way it works is she doesn't charge exorbitant prices for any of these tattoos. If you want to get a tattoo from her, you have to give her a story. And if you give her a good story, then she does a tattoo for you. And so essentially what happens is one of the characters was able to kind of get an appointment. And this NPC is a cute little female gnome named Alani Fizgill. And she's got this pink hair, these little pink ponytails. And she's a very rare type of divination wizard. So our monk player wrote up this cool little story that he told. And while he was telling it, kind of unbeknownst to him, just the way that the time and magic works, she is crafting this tattoo as the story is being told. And the tattoos are unique for every person. And she doesn't even necessarily quite know what they will do when they're done, only that they are customized per person. It's kind of like she goes into this, you know, like the divination wizard trance type thing, or like, you know, fortune tellers or seers when they're telling the future, that, you know, you can kind of go into that trance and you're just like, here is the prophecy. And then you kind of snap out of it and you go, what did I say? So, did someone write that down? Oh God, I hope someone wrote that down. It's a little bit like that. That's kind of how it's themed. So it's very, very fun. Very, very fun NPC to play. I've had her for quite a while. And so, yeah, it's really good.
That's really neat. It's really creative. I like that. As being the kind of way it goes, and it adds so much more of a touch of magic to it than just like, I'm just going to tattoo this rune into your skin. So it's really creative. I'd like it.
It's very, very fun RP. Very fun RP.
Yeah.
Okay. So with that, that is going to be our show for this week. Thank you so much, everybody, for continuing to listen, continuing to give feedback, jumping on our Discord and having discussions. We absolutely love hearing from you. We absolutely love having that dialogue. Ben, why don't you tell everyone where we can be reached if they want to do one of those things?
Of course. Everything I'm going to say, except for maybe a link to our email, is going to be found on dndiscussions.com. It is the best place to find a link to our Discord, which we always recommend that you join. It's a great community full of some wonderful people. We're having discussions, DN discussions, if you will, as well as, you know, just some, you know, really fun, good times. So join us there. You'll find a link on dndiscussions.com to our Discord. On top of that, you'll also find links to our Blue Sky accounts. So the show itself is at DN Discussions. Ryan is at TBK Zord. I am at Ben Bumhofer. You can follow us on social media there if you so choose. Aside from that, I did mention our email. That's a way to get a hold of us that isn't, you know, on social media, isn't on Discord. It's a way that only Ryan and I will actually read it. And that's going to be dndiscussions@gmail.com. Nice private way to get a hold of us if you have something you want to say or tell us your stories or specifically tell us about a time that you know, metagaming either helped or hurt your game. Who knows? You know, we love to hear all types of stories. So definitely check those out. If you're sitting here listening to this and thinking, I bet these guys don't even play Dungeons & Dragons. I mean, especially that Ben guy, he's not talking about his game. Well, guess what? I am actually part of an actual play podcast called Plus 5 to Hit, which you can listen to. And one of the reasons I don't share about what happens in that game on this show is because that's an entirely different show that you can go out and listen to. And I try not to be one of those people who, you know, throw spoilers out there. So check out Plus 5 to Hit if you want to hear what's going on with that. Aside from that, again, the show, DN Discussions. Find everything you need at dndiscussions.com. Everybody, thank you very much for listening. It is always a pleasure to talk to you, Ryan. And I'm glad that we were able to get together tonight to get this recorded and talk about some metagaming. And everybody out there, again, thank you for all your support. And until next time, roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.